their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
You've never once helped a little lady in the kitchen. You've never assisted her with the grocery shopping. But for some reason, when it comes to grilling slabs of flesh over an open fire, it's suddenly a man's job.
You love to handle your
You know precisely how long it takes to cook every variety of meat. A steak, one beer. Brisket, three. An entire suckling pig, can you say keg?
You're both getting marinated.
When the meat is fully cooked, you're half-baked.
Try not to pass out in the fire, yeah.
So the next time you're wiping barbecue sauce off every one of your appendages, be sure to thank the guy in the Kiss the Cook apron, passed out in the chaise lounge. Mr. Backyard Barbecuer, a real American hero.
Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
Don't look now, I think the deck is on fire.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning. Welcome to Tuesday, August 17th. We're live in the studio yet once again to talk shit for an hour and then let you go on.
No, we're here to change the world. Breaking news here.
Right here.
Do you realize how unbreaking our news is? Let me tell you. Like yesterday, a friend of mine, she's like, I'm stuck in traffic because Obama was in, I guess, Beverly Hills or Century City yesterday. Just right
That's
near us.
That's what they said, yeah.
But we didn't even talk about it. We didn't even know.
No, I didn't even know till later in
just
the day.
Just make sure you guys tune in for the breaking news.
Yeah.
There's an explosion downtown.
Don't turn us on.
We had people calling in going, hey, there's an explosion downtown. What happened? And we're like, what?
Well, we're in a little bubble here.
We're just a little... We got headphones on. We can't hear anything.
We just talk about things that are not important and don't matter.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Yes.
So you're going to be gone next week for a few days.
I'm going to be gone for a few days.
Okay. So everybody knows that...
Everybody knows.
We're going to have replays.
You know, just a couple replays. I'm meeting up with a man friend.
Mm-hmm. That'll be cool.
It'll be good.
Okay, so you'll tell us all about it when you return, I'm sure.
he's listening right now.
Okay, so we won't say a thing.
I'll just tell everybody because it's fun.
What?
I scared Sam yesterday, and I told him I was going to get eloped.
That's what you said.
Sam was like, what the hell are you leaving?
I thought you were really serious.
Let me tell you, everybody, I'm not leaving L.A. for a while. Uh-huh. I have too much to do.
Oh, okay. So why did you tell me that?
I was joking. But, you know, just...
You were joking?
Yeah, it was just more of a playful thing because I needed more time off the way. I needed to create some atmosphere pressure.
I see. So you have to give me a lie.
I'm like, yeah, my grandma's, she's hanging on by a thread, Sam.
Yeah.
Thought you didn't have a grandma.
Going
know.
To elope. When people elope, they don't tell anybody in advance.
That's kind of why I thought it was funny. Yeah. Would you have ever eloped?
What for?
I mean, it just to get it done quick and no stress and no pressure.
Never considered it, so I don't know. Maybe I would under the right circumstances.
I've been to weddings, and I've seen what good weddings look like, but I've also seen, like, the stress and the not funness.
Mm.
And you're kind of like, really? I'd rather just have a big barbecue.
Yeah.
Get
well, that depends, yeah. So, but you are talking marriage, right?
Well, this is somebody that I've known for 10 years,
right.
And we've dated for 5.
Right.
And so I think one day, absolutely.
One day, absolutely, you're going to get married to this guy.
I think so, unless something crazy happens, you know.
Okay.
So
we'll start planning the wedding then.
Well,
I don't know. Is it too soon?
It's too soon, yeah.
Okay.
I'm here. I got to be here.
All right.
It's fun being single here.
Well, you invited a great guest to the studio. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
You guys, we have a fabulous, fabulous man here. I met him at the Grand Theft Auto show. He's a comedian.
Audio. It's Grand Theft Audio.
Oh, Grand Theft.
Yeah, you ruined their pun.
Sorry.
They work so hard on
Jared, you need to get close.
That's a really good pun.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So Grand Theft Audio show and great comedy writer. He's written for some of the greats, but I'll let him tell you all about that. Give it up for Jared Cardwell. Woo!
Welcome, Jared.
Hi,
welcome
how are you
to
guys
the studio.
Doing?
Good, good.
We had some confusion this morning with the calendar, so Sam didn't
Yeah, I
here.
See a gentleman waiting outside the door, and I'm asking him, who are you, you know, and he said, or what are you, who are you waiting for? And he said, for the radio station, and I'm like trying to struggle for a few minutes trying to figure out when did I invite him.
No, I did, and, but it didn't go on the calendar for some reason, or it didn't show up on your calendar.
Yeah, so it was a very awkward situation.
Poor Jared was like, is it cool if I'm here?
Yeah.
I hope I'm not.
I know, I would have felt like shit if somebody didn't know I was coming, you know?
Well, I knew he was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, they argued about who was going to tell me to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
What's he doing here?
So, Jared, are you originally from L.A.?
Yes, I am.
Really?
Born on Sunset Boulevard.
No, you weren't.
Really?
Yes, actually on the street. No, but I was born in Kaiser Hospital on Sunset.
Just not a lot of people born in L.A., let alone on Sunset Boulevard. So
not
there
in
is.
Sunset, yeah.
So let's get down to let's just get down to business. You're born and raised in Los Angeles on the Strip.
I grew up in Highland Park, but...
Yeah, okay, that's kind of a normal place. Normal's relative, but...
If you're a cholo, it's normal. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a cholo. So you grew up in Highland Park. I have a friend that lives out there. And are you weird? Are you weird?
Are you weird?
Why do you ask that?
Yeah, would he?
Because
would
he answer? Because this is what I've been getting from people. People will say people that lived here their whole life, or this is where they're home, they're from, and this is what they've grown up around.
Right.
There's just something off about them, and I think it's everybody that moves here that's weird.
Exactly. Why would they move here if they weren't weird?
Yeah, but then what about the people that this is? You grew up in the mean streets of Hollywood and Highland Park. You know, you've seen stuff at an age where most people were probably, I don't know. About
I'm sure things were different when he was a child, you know? Right?
I don't know.
You know, it was the 1990s, so.
Right.
Yeah, 1990s, yeah. He's 15 years old.
Other than the occasional knife fight down my block, pretty normal. No, you're right. It did change. Mm. Like, the gangs back then were really quaint.
I see, and today they're really violent.
It's Highland Park. I mean, this may be too inside LA, but it's actually not that dangerous a neighborhood. Mm. Like, we always thought it was the hood. Now, I know the gangsters there would say it's the toughest neighborhood, but like, crime statistically, it's not that bad.
Mm.
But I wouldn't walk around at night. Like, my family house is there, and I don't really want to move back there because it's, I don't know.
Not a great neighborhood anymore.
But great people. Mm. I mean, it's one of the coolest places, and it's becoming like a hipster's paradise.
Really?
Yeah, it is. My friend has bought a house out there. She's got great views.
Yeah, there's a great bar called The York, which is like a gastro pub, which I guess is all the rage now. And
The York?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's a gastro pub?
Gastro pub is somebody that does like aggressive,
it's like special,
bar food.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they'll have like Kobe sliders or something.
I see. Okay, so it's not just...
It's like your gourmet, it's like your gourmet pub, and I think the beer thing's big, right? Like, it's like they got lots of different beers on tap and stuff.
Yeah,
gastropubs do.
Mm.
So I met him at the Grand Theft Audio show, and how are you affiliated with those dudes? How did you come to meet them?
Well, I'm the guy that wakes Carl Kozlowski up when he falls asleep.
What?
Does that happen often?
Man, I hope Carl's not listening to this. No, yeah, but he talks about it. Like, he's America's number one narcoleptic radio personality.
Really?
Yeah. I've known Carl 3 years just through hanging out around comedy.
Yeah.
Because he's a comedian, and he's also a pretty great newspaper writer. And so I met him through my friend Fraser Smith, just hanging out in the green room.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Fraser Smith, he used to be on radio, right? I remember him.
Yeah.
He used to be on K-Rock or something, I think, at one point.
Top-rated radio host ever in L.A.
Really?
Really?
He got like a 20, which is not even possible now.
Right.
I think like a 4 is a high rating in L.A. now.
Wow, and so he had a 20 share.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
A radio genius that should be on the air now.
Yeah.
And why is he not on the air?
It's a tough business. I think they want a lot of... I mean, you guys, I think, are doing your own, like, real thing here, but I think, you know, corporate radio, I think they want a lot of guys that are not really that dynamic a radio personality because I think they want people that are just going to always be
like
just
corporate people doing what they want and
who do what they want, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's an oversimplification, but they just want people that are low maintenance. That you know, it's I think it's a very political game. I always feel like you know, some of these guys in you know, the big time talk radio are guys that couldn't, you know, wanted to get into network TV and couldn't. And so they, you know, they kind of take it out on the talent. They don't want the talent to be to shine too much.
Yeah.
But if but I thought if like it all boils down to bottom dollar and numbers, if somebody has a 20 share or whatever, doesn't that speak something to people? Like if they care about numbers, listenership and
you would think so, but I think it's kind of interesting because, like, let's say we have the internet and you have these people that are getting like 10 million views on their clips they show every week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just met the one of the guys was in Lonely Girl 15, which was the first big web show,
mm-hmm.
and they made had over 250 million views of all their shows,
mm-hmm.
and yet nobody there has landed a major deal.
Yeah, my friend was in Lonely Girl.
Who's that?
Melanie Murkowski. You know her?
Oh yeah, the great stage and screen actress. She's British, right?
No, she's Canadian.
I'm kidding.
No, but so you're telling me that that it just it's more like they just don't care. I just still don't get it. But I thought if numbers talked, I thought that's what people cared about, that
right.
they would be able to.
Yeah, but he may not fit into any format that's on there right now.
It doesn't.
You know?
If somebody's
sometimes
got
they'll pigeonhole you, you know.
Well, no, the reality is if you have that much listenership and you have that much influence, you know what? You create your own. They work around you, is what I thought.
But no, radio right. tends to fight you if you get a good listenership.
Why?
I think they become afraid. They become afraid you're going to move on to another network. They're afraid that they're not going to be pegged with creating your success. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, and it's very odd. It's very you know, I very much believe in what you're saying, free market and everything. But strangely, no. Well, here's the thing about radio. If all their ads are sold, they don't really care what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, look, Howard Stern still got flack when he was on commercial radio. And nobody could deliver more numbers than him.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, radio is just a weird game.
Yeah.
It's a weird game, huh?
Yeah, and times have changed. I mean, I think Fraser Smith was like in the 80s and stuff, you know, and now it's a whole different ball game.
But
know?
He kills at the clubs as an MC
really?
With the young kids, yeah.
So he's a comedian now? Is that what
he
does?
Oh, yeah, he has been for about the last 20 or 30.
Really?
20 years, yeah.
Wow, very interesting stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everybody look him up, Fraser Smith.
Yeah.
Topic of our conversation today. Hope you're doing good, Fraser.
Yeah.
Do you know Fraser?
I don't know Fraser, no. He wasn't at the show, was he?
No.
Okay, I didn't meet him. We'll have to chat. He needs to come to LA Talk Radio.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
So how did you get into comedy?
When I was in college, I don't want to get too far back, but I went to Pasadena Poly, and then I was a weird kid that, I guess I was weird.
There you go. That's okay, that's a good thing sometimes.
But I felt like I had this weird thing like, oh, I don't need to do my homework, I learn in class, and I wanted to be a screenwriter since I was like 12.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I just decided that's what I wanted to do. So I left high school early because I wasn't really vibing with it. And I heard you could take a high school equivalency class. So, I mean, a test. So I took it, got out of school, and went to Pasadena City College. And when I was working, I became a playwright. Mm. I became very interested in playwriting. I was at the LA Theater Center Young Playwrights Workshop. Went to Occidental College.
Mm-hmm.
My,
so you were serious about this?
Yeah, and then after school, after college, I was working at Kinko's in Pasadena, and I was looking for any writing gig, and my brother had heard that you could send jokes into Jay Leno.
Mm.
So I did. You could just fax them in.
Really?
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I faxed in 5 jokes. I kind of always liked comedy, and the first night, the night after I sent them in, I turned on the show, and, like, the third joke, he starts saying it, and it's like being psychic when you write jokes.
Because
you'll say the first word, and you go, I know what's coming next.
Right.
And then he says the second word, the third word, the fourth word. I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's
wow.
my joke.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the joke was?
Yeah.
Tell it.
That's okay. This will kind of peg out all day. But it was about Sonny Bono when Sonny and Cher got married. No, I'm kidding. It was Bill Clinton is appointing everything from Postmaster General to chief of staff. He goes, Bill, I saw you jogging. You don't need a Postmaster General. You need a Thighmaster General.
So okay. Did they tell you they were going to use the? I guess not.
No,
huh?
Because I think he gets so much submissions, he would just spend all day notifying people.
Yeah, exactly.
So he does a joke. Literally, the next day I go to my mailbox, there's a check.
Really?
For $50.
How cool. Well, it's better than nothing.
And I would gladly take $50.
Yeah, for each joke. Why not?
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Then that kind of got you going, like, wow, I've got something here I can...
Right. I didn't use this way, but if you said that you sold a joke to Jay Leno, then people in the comedy clubs assume that you were a writer for Jay Leno.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And
like
it made
regular
it,
writer.
Right. It made it easier to get work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then a friend who I went to Pasadena City College with hooked me up with Fraser Smith, who was hosting a show live from the Laugh Factory.
Mm-hmm.
Where he was he was hosting this and it was on KLSX,
mm-hmm.
and they had five comedians on every week.
Right.
And that turned out to be everyone from like Dave Chappelle to Ray Romano, a lot of great, great comics. And also Fraser was the MC at the Ice House and the Laugh Factory.
Mm.
So just hanging out with him working on the show, I met every comedian in the business.
Really? So it's important to hang out with the right people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of have a theory on it, and this is... and it's so funny, it's like when you're talking to young comics and stuff, they don't get this. It's more important, I call it the bullseye theory.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look where the industry is really, like what's the best club, what's
mm-hmm,
the best comedians,
yeah.
and stay as close to that as possible.
Mm.
Because a great comic walking off stage will give you better advice than your friend at the open mic will give you if you talk to him.
Yeah.
24 hours a day.
Yeah, because they're more neutral and they'll tell you the truth.
They'll tell you the truth, and also they just have the right ideas how to make it in comedy.
Right.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
What do you think about that? I mean, the whole networking thing, you don't find it a little nauseating? It's not very original in this town to be sitting around trying to glean something from somebody that's already been doing it.
Well, if you love doing it, though, I mean...
You got to do it, yeah. You got to do it. But, I mean, the networking element of it, don't you find that a little bit...
Yeah, I don't like to do it anymore. I'd rather be at home, even though I've made friends in comedy. And
mm-hmm.
staying at a comedy club is interesting because it's like a class reunion every night. You never know who's going to show up. So it might be somebody you haven't seen for 10 years or 5 years.
That's kind of fun, huh?
Yeah, but there's like it's a correlation between how much you hang out in the clubs and how much work you get if you're a writer for comedians.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concentrating on other things now too.
Yeah, well, can you tell us some of the comics that you've written for?
Some guys I've worked with. I've worked with Arsenio Hall. I worked with him on when they brought Star Search back. I was his writer. I'd write the monologues
because
he wanted to do a comedy monologue, and so I had to write jokes that were done live. It was actually a pretty highly rated show. People don't know that. It was always around the top 10, and so it was live for 10 million people twice a week.
That's awesome.
And not only would I write the monologue, I would the first like big dress rehearsal, I came out and there's a little. It's funny they have this grand set, but on
mm-hmm.
the back of the set it's just plywood and so there's a door that Arsenio would come out. So he came back and I would stand right behind there, and he said, by the way. When we do the show, I want you to get some 3x5 cards and a Sharpie, and you're going to write jokes as I come off, and you're going to hand them to me, and I'm going to go out and do them based on what's going on in the show, because it's live. And
isn't it funny? Now you're like the little joke, like a, you know, freaking jukebox pinball machine. You got to just start churning it out.
Yeah.
They look at you like that, huh? Like, is it kind of like that?
No, I mean, the good guys you work with, Arsenio, George Lopez, they're great. They really respect you. They're really...
But you don't think that's a high expectation to be kind of observing from backstage what the audience is doing and then have to churn out? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It seems like a pretty high...
Yeah.
I mean, not that you can't do it, but that's just kind of like you're going auto... Like, you're going...
I freaked out. I mean, literally an audience of, like... 500 or 600 live in the studio and 10 million people. So I write that joke, I may have 15 seconds of CBS's time to myself.
Mm.
Like I could write down something, and if Arsenio agreed to do it, he probably wouldn't, but I could write something that would get us
kicked
off the air, or you know, the network sensors would bleep it because it was a live show. So yeah, I mean, it was like... I mean,
it was a pressure, huh?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And it took me a while, I think, to get up to speed on the jokes. But I also kind of love it. It's
like the Olympics, huh?
Yeah, it's absolutely like the Olympics.
For joke writing. You're like, oh, shit, and here we go. You're just like letting the front laugh really loud. Got a bad chuckle. You're just like, it's so much input and having to, like, figure it out and then output, right? Like, just...
Right. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, but it was just such a shock because I knew we were going to go live the next day. Like, we were actually going to do the show the next day. And so, wow, that was just a shock. But I don't know why this is kind of twisted, but my favorite experience as a joke writer ever, and, you know, any of my clients, don't get me wrong, you know, it's like I try to write the best jokes, but one time I gave Arsenio a joke, and I think it was actually in the script, and he does it, and nobody in the audience laughs. I mean, not a single person in the audience.
Are you serious?
And then you could also tell that probably 10 million people at home weren't laughing.
Mm.
And, you know, getting laughs I'm used to.
Yeah.
With, you know, politicians, everybody, famous people, it's surreal to watch them doing my joke, and that's great. But the power of making 10 million people not laugh was amazing.
That's even harder.
Oh, so you kind of felt a rush from that?
Well, yeah, because it's like, I think it's just a defense mechanism, really.
Well, I mean, that is a huge, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not only, you're not only the comic that bombed doing that joke, but, you know, they can recover. They can recover quickly, and they've already got the affection of the audience, so it's like, okay, whatever, he can always play it off.
Right.
But to go, wow, that just that didn't work. So what are some of the other comics that you've worked for as well?
Well, I worked for George Lopez for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy like that really writes his, you know, his act is his act, but I would help him when he was doing, you know, when he was doing, like, guest spots on, you know, guest spots on TV shows and stuff like that,
right?
Yeah.
Or special events and stuff.
So now, so you usually behind the scenes, you write the jokes and everything. Do you do any stand up yourself?
No, and it's very rare. I
really?
Think I'm the only writer that I know that has not done stand up. I did it a couple times in college.
And how come you don't?
I don't like to be out front and center like that.
Yeah,
just not.
Yeah.
It's a different muscle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always thought that the writing thing, you know, it's definitely more of a, I think, more inside the industry. You know, having people that go into stand-up and that get writers. I mean, you kind of described it differently as though these are people that have their own voice and they're already developed in their talent, but they're looking for more time and they have so much time to fill, whether it's different shows, so they bring somebody on to supplement and to really give them more, just more material as opposed to people
ideas.
That are like...
Right.
New into comedy that are like, I want to do comedy, and they don't have their own style or voice.
Yeah, and it's such a competitive field. Like, you know, it works itself out after year, you know, five or something. Or, you know, I've never seen a comedian succeed before, like, 6 or 7 years, and that's pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the odds are, most people that start doing comedy, it's just not going to work out for them. So you could be even a better writer than I am and give a young comic the best material in the world, and they wouldn't even, like, recognize it.
Right, yeah. So now, I mean, so did you always like to write, or was it specifically the comedy that you liked?
No, it was, yeah, like I said, I you know, I wanted to be a playwright and other things. My brother was a filmmaker, and I was always kind of into that, and I'd always tell funny stories, like I'd do impressions for people when I was like a little, like 2 or 3 and stuff.
Really? That young, huh?
There's a famous story about me, like when we're on a camping trip, doing a line from a TV personality of the time, which I won't mention because it make me sound really old.
Yeah. Well, aren't
laughing.
We all?
Yeah.
Everybody's old except for Kira.
Yeah.
I'm internally young, yeah, right.
Yeah. So... you know, so then I came home, I saw this movie with Tommy Lee Jones and Sally Field, and somehow I said, I want to be a writer, and I went home and I got this yellow notebook and I started writing a screenplay, and ever since then I've been a writer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening to our other guest who's supposed to call in. I think he called me on my cell phone instead, which is not a good idea.
No, that's
so
okay.
I may have given him the wrong number. So if you are still listening, call us on the call-in number. It's right there on the website, 323-203-0815, if any of you want to call. And We're talking to Jared here. Now, I wanted to change the topic a little bit because, Kara, we haven't talked about the mosque at Ground Zero yet, right?
We have not talked about that.
No, we haven't talked
Comedy
about that.
Comedy gold.
Yeah, there you go, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the biggest news about this is that Obama is trying to, I don't know, he's not really backpedaling, but he's gotten himself into a lot of hot water, I think, now.
Let's
when
recap.
He's supporting
yeah, let's,
this.
Let's recap what it is. For
yeah,
example.
I think everybody knows, but they're wanting to build a huge mosque at Ground Zero in New York, right where the World Trade Center used to be. And this is obviously creating a lot of controversy. And, you know, people are saying, well, we're picking on the Muslims. You know, not all of them are like this and that. And
why do they want to build a mosque?
Yeah, why would they want to build it right there? That's the question, you know. And even if they have the right to do this, this is definitely the wrong thing to do at the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. I mean, why would you do this if you know it's going to create so much controversy and pain? You know, what about all the families of the people that die there? You know, what about all that? I mean, you know, isn't there any a little bit of sensitivity there? And, you know, so
yeah.
I think it just shows you how that religion is really not about love, not about peace, but rather than troublemaking. And that's my opinion. So,
yeah,
you know.
You know, I don't understand why if this isn't about making a statement and this is just about somebody's religious freedom to build a mosque wherever they want, why would they do it there? And they're, you know what I mean? It's almost like I don't even think it's good PR for Muslims. You know
no,
what I mean?
It's right. not. It's not. And this thing is going to be huge. It's not like you can miss it or anything. You know.
I have an interesting story on that. Just mm-hmm. coincidentally, I know a guy. He was a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he grew up with the guy that that is building the mosque.
Oh, really?
It's a New York real estate guy that's Muslim, and uh-huh. he's he said he just basically found this old Burlington coat factory.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend says he was with him while he was walking down the street, and he saw this building that was either I think it was just for lease
because
it was an empty Burlington coat factory,
right.
which went out of business possibly, like kind of yeah. a you know, economic like slant on this whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And he said he called the number. He saw the guy called the number on his cell phone, and this guy had become very religious in the last couple of years. I mean, according to the story, it wasn't a wild story, so I think it's probably true. And he just thought it was a good space to. And I think he's not backtracking on the mosque because he feels like, well, we didn't do anything wrong, like
right,
personally,
right.
in this mosque.
Right.
So I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah.
But then there were the comments that the apparently the imam said that, well, the U.S. wasn't responsible for 9/11.
Yeah.
But we kind of brought it on ourselves.
Yeah.
Which was.
But yeah. I mean, but this is akin to the Germans building something. You know, outside the
right.
concentration camps. I mean, you know, it's like you don't take this. It's too painful there. That
yeah.
whole place is too painful for the United States. And for the president to support this, I think is preposterous.
Well, they're sitting here saying, you know, these aren't religious leaders. These are terrorists who murder innocent men, women, and children. And basically they're saying that the people building the mosque have no affiliation with that. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case, then why would they even risk having an affiliation with it?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's no sensitivity there whatsoever.
Yeah,
I think they're trying to send a message, and it's the wrong one, you know? Trying to say, yeah, there's
Well, isn't Barack Obama Muslim anyway?
Well, no, he's not, but that's
well,
what
he's
they claim.
Well, he said that he was Muslim on an interview, but then he backtracked and said he was Christian.
Yeah,
it was
but
like,
he's got an Arabic name for crying out loud. You
no,
know?
I mean, he said he talked about his Muslim freedom, and then the reporter said, oh, you mean you're Christian? Muslim religion. He goes, Muslim faith. And she goes, oh, you mean your Christian faith? He goes, oh, yeah, I mean my Christian faith.
Really? Is that what he said?
Yeah, you can look it up on YouTube.
Really?
And you could say it was an accident, but I don't know how you make an accident like that. Well, not that it's bad to be I'm not saying you can't be a Muslim. I'm just
right.
saying it just sounds like either say you are or say you aren't. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah. And he's cozying up to them, you know, and I just don't understand. And now, you know, I mean, Obama's message is called incoherent. That's what they're saying, you know, which I don't know about that because to me it's pretty clear what he's trying to say.
Yeah, he said I'm not commenting on the wisdom of building a mosque here. That's
right.
what he said today. He goes, I'm just saying they have the right to do it.
Yeah.
Which they do, I guess.
Yes.
But, you know, at the same time, it's kind of like I thought that was like a protected ground or something. I thought there was some kind of like – they're going to be building monuments or something like that in that area. Or...
Well, I had a discussion. How close is it to Ground Zero? It's not on Ground Zero.
No, but probably it's not. Half a block down or something.
Right. You know? And that's what I think.
Yeah. It is in the area. I mean, I'm sure if it wasn't right there, people wouldn't have made a big deal out
probably
of it.
Probably right,
you
know?
But, you know, and these are the things that worried me about Obama when he was elected. You know, it's all these things that are not necessarily good for the country, I don't think. You know, I think most people are, you know, only Islamic supporters can possibly defend this and say it's a good thing. You know, anybody that's not is totally against it, and it's a bad taste. It's insensitive, and I think it's a slap in the face. I really do.
Yeah, I definitely would want to know more about, like what you said, how close it is to Ground Zero. I mean, that does make a big difference. But
right.
It also, I just think it's kind of like, I thought that area would be kind of more of a national monument
right.
area.
Right, like a memorial or something.
I mean, when it was, know? When they had the lights, are the lights still there?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. I don't know. I have a real quick, amazing story about Ground Zero. My writing partner, I'm working on an animated show, and my writing partner was working for a comedian, and this comedian made a tribute to 9/11. I forgot whether it was an album or a painting. This guy was a comedian. It was Yakov Smirnoff, of all people.
Really?
And so...
The Russian comedian.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, in Russia, we didn't have to pull, you know.
Yeah.
So he had this quote. He called my friend and said, I need a quote for my 9/11 tribute and for this painting I was doing. And so my friend wrote a quote for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then during some ceremony, that quote was projected on the side of the ruins of 9/11. I mean, yeah, the ruins of the World Trade Center.
Really?
Wow.
So, I mean, talk about a weird writing gig.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been surreal.
Yeah.
Do you know what the quote was?
Oh, you can't judge us by, like, the size. You don't judge a hero by the size of his heart. It's like you judge it by the depth of his heart.
Hmm.
Totally not what it was, but it was something of that
gist.
Yeah,
kind of like a, Interesting.
So, you know, I mean, it just, I think it's meant to really rile us up, and I think they succeeded in that.
There's this thing, and I'm absolutely not saying this is the case, but... You know, just the interesting thing that they claim that it's a tradition in Islam when you conquer somebody is to build a mosque.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even think it's that. I really don't. But like, just what if it was? Like,
yeah, I know. Well, I mean, it's not a mystery. It's not a secret that Islam was spread by the sword. You know,
right?
And it's right there in the Quran and in history books, and I mean, look at many of the flags of Arabic countries. They have swords on them, you know? I mean, this is what it's about. It's about conquering. It's about fighting. It's about violence, you know? I don't see anything else that they contribute to this society, to this culture, to the world, other than all this violence and hatred, you know? And, you know, maybe I'm not seeing it, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm with Kara that, of course, I don't find it's any problem if you're Muslim, and I don't think we can have any mechanism to ban that mosque, because then it'll be turned against Christians or Jews at another time, that if there's a law where we can do that. But the point is, you know, once this sensitivity has come up, why doesn't this group rescind? Why doesn't they move their mosque?
Right, yeah. Because it's not about the sensitivity. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you want to see if they're like, hey, listen, we're not. This is what we want to do. Why are they being militant about it? Like, why are they being so moving forward? It would probably speak more volumes if they were like, hey, guys, we understand.
And my problem is, like, a lot of my more you know progressive friends will constantly criticize Christianity for the Crusades and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do that, then acknowledge that within modern Islam or. You know, any religion, you've got to look at everything fairly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it is troubling, but it's also troubling that we cannot have a law that says that mosque can't be there.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's not, to me, I look at it like, this isn't about telling people they can't build wherever they want to build. I feel like this should be a protected ground.
Yes.
I feel like it shouldn't be something that's your basic, you know, let's throw a Macy's or a McDonald's there. I feel like it needs to be kind of a monument or something like that. I don't feel like we should be having not just mosques, but I feel like it's a disrespect to what happened there, regardless. I mean,
You know, for all the people that are saying it's okay, I wonder what would happen if we got attacked by Islamists like today. Would people still... Because what I'm saying is people forget, you know? Mm-hmm. If we were hit by Islamists today, I guarantee you nobody would be for building that mosque. Mm. You know? It's just that we forget.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but, you know, I mean, if they remind us again who we're dealing with here, I think we're going to put things back in perspective. But we can't forget. I mean, for crying out loud, it's going to be 9 years next month, you know? And it's
I feel like
fresh.
It just should be like a national area where it's...
Well, yeah. Can you have a Burlington Coat Factory then? With no disrespect to the Burlington Coat Factory people,
right.
That's a great... store.
Yeah, but if it existed there before, you know, I mean, that's, you know...
Oh, right, right, yeah. And yeah. I think it did, yeah. I think it was damaged.
And they're
not there
to make a statement. I think with the mosque, they're there to make a statement, and it's
that's
not a good
point,
one.
That's a big point, yeah.
It's not a pro-U.S., that's for sure.
Well, you know, moving on to more lighter topics.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about the Iran and Israel situation?
Yeah, that's very light.
I saw in Drudge Report 8 days to attack the nuclear site. I didn't actually read the article. And
it says they have till the end of the week.
Because of the completion, because that's when the plant will be completed, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're saying that in 8 days we won't be able to attack that plant anymore?
Well, you know, this isn't anything new for Israel. I mean, they've attacked them in the past. They said, don't build. They built. They went down.
Israel did not attack
Iraq.
That was Iraq.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. But they've been threatened. They gave them the warning. They didn't do it. And Israel went in and took away their... their nuclear defense, right?
In Iraq, right.
Okay, yeah. Well, so this isn't anything new. Explain, I mean, you're Israeli. So explain to us, if you can, not that you have to be like the representative, but why this is pressing and why they're in a bad position. Because it seems like this is just, it seems like people are just seeing this as attack.
Well, because Iran is a rogue country, you know. I mean, they do whatever they want, and they don't care about the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they've become very dangerous. And they're enemies of a lot of people. It's a very, very deeply Islamic country.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that has to do with the West, they hate. Especially Israel, of course.
Okay.
So if they have these capabilities, and they're not very far, if they can launch missiles like nuclear missiles into Israel...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And into Saudi Arabia, you know, I mean, there's even into Iraq, you know, I mean, they're enemies with almost everybody. So, you know, if they get that power, that's pretty dangerous shit.
And the idea is that Saudi Arabia and the other countries will tacitly approve of any attack that Israel does.
Exactly.
Because,
exactly. They're not going to.
Right. The Iran is a Persian country, even though it has a lot of different ethnicities.
Right.
And, you know, Saudi Arabia is Arabic.
Right.
I mean, that goes back a little bit to the mosque controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Is, I don't know if it's controversy if 70% of the people are against it.
Right.
But the idea that you can say even within Islam, mm-hmm. you know, there are factions.
Right.
And so there are certainly people that may be in favor of that mosque that are as appalled by 9/11. But also similarly in Iran, like mm-hmm. the other Gulf states don't want it. And it's interesting how, you know, anti-Israel, but they kind of want Israel to take care of this problem.
Yeah, because they can't,
yeah.
you know.
Mm.
But from what I understand, it would be a lot harder than it was with the Iraq plant because
right.
that was only one. Now they have a lot of them, and they're all spread out and hidden. So it wouldn't be, I mean, a mission to destroy that would take weeks, from what I understand, rather than a few minutes.
Yeah, and obviously it's not going to be good, but it's kind of like, you know, what's the real... side effect of this. It says that a Russian company is expected to help Iran start loading nuclear fuel into its plant starting on Saturday.
Yeah, which is not surprising.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the Russians always help the bad guys.
And it says, you know, so after which an attack on the reactor could trigger harmful radiation, which Israel does want to avoid. So unless the Israelis act immediately to shut down the facility, it'll be too late.
Right.
So I guess the timeliness has a lot to do with the fact that the casualty... of.
Right, but there's incredible blowback. There's Iran could attack our troops in Iraq in mm-hmm. retaliation.
Right.
They have conventional weapons they can use. They probably don't want to start a full-blown war. There are also a lot of oil prices could shoot through the roof, not that they're already not there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of repercussions.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's very dangerous to a lot of people, to a lot of countries, to the world, even to the U.S., you know. And it's just any rogue country that has a nuclear weapon is very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's like giving a toddler a gun. It's not really a good idea, right? I'm just, you know, it's not a good idea. But, I mean, what? I don't understand the nuclear thing that much, but it's kind of like, okay, so they're not fully able to launch nukes right now.
Right.
But if they get this stuff up and running, they're going to be able to.
Yeah.
And Israel has nukes, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And then the surrounding countries, do they have nukes as well?
Some do.
Some do.
Yeah.
Are we taking their asses out, or are they going to be disassembled?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Wait, are you taking whose asses out? Iran's? Or?
Just take asses out! Just take them out! No, I'm saying
the rogue
nations. Are they a threat having these nukes as well? I mean, it's kind of one of these things where I'm trying to understand if from
nuclear weapons, and as a nuclear engineer, no, I'm kidding. I'm a comedy writer, but nuclear weapons are much more complicated than people think. They're not. They're so hard to produce. You need such a big industrial base.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, otherwise, think about it. If they're so easy to make, every country, industrialized country on Earth would have one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they take huge power plants and water facilities to do.
Right.
And
just to create a few kilos of plutonium. You know? It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. Yeah, you're right.
That's why you can find the plants. They're all underground, but you can see where the water's coming in the trucks for supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not be able to weaponize it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so many fears, like, I don't know if this is even legitimate, but, and even if Ahmadinejad is really in charge, because they say that the mullahs are really in charge.
Right.
But the fact that he believes in this 12th imam coming back,
mm-hmm.
and so there's an idea that, you know, a nuclear war could facilitate this.
Right.
Like, that he wouldn't even care if the country, or it's in the prophecy that if his country is destroyed,
right.
this
exactly.
will bring back.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what's dangerous, you know, that willingness to commit suicide. You know, just like suicide bombers, man. I mean, there's nothing you can do about them. You know?
So if Israel goes over there and Israel starts, you know, taking out these plants, but they're underground, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So how are they going to do that? They just the surface?
Remember a couple years ago they were trying to fund these bunker buster nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly why they were, because they knew that countries like Iran were gearing up, and then they had, so they put all the plants underground. And
right.
these are bombs that could go through, like,
plus, you can't see them with satellites and that, you know. But like I said, also, they spread them around, you know. So even if you take out a few, they're still going to have some left.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's, it's not as simple as it used to be.
What do you think about the backlash that Israel's getting right now?
Israel always gets backlash.
It's just kind of like they
Yeah, I mean, it's something you get used to, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, every time something happens, the whole world in unison condemns Israel. You know, it doesn't matter what Israel does, there's always that condemnation and always that hatred and, you know, anti-Israel this and anti-Israel that. So so Israelis have realized that, you know, they can't really listen to the rest of the world. You got to do what's good for you and what's good for your people.
Right. Israel, everybody's so pro, you know, in the last couple of years, very pro-UN.
Mm.
And Israel was developed by, I'm not sure if it was the UN at that point, but by UN charter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of an interesting dichotomy, is that now the UN is the thing that, well, it's the neutral party that we should trust. And
yeah, so-called neutral, you know. But but there are so many resolutions against Israel, it's not even funny.
Right. And they basically helped form the modern state of Israel.
Yeah. And what you have to understand is no other country in the world is threatened in the way that Israel is constantly by so many enemies, and yet still it gets criticized for everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
just to try to defend itself. So, you know, I mean, at least that's my view on things.
Yeah, I understand. It's kind of like, at what point do you give up popularity competition and you just go, okay,
yeah, it's not about being popular, you know?
Yeah, so...
And Israel has used much restraint because of the United States many times, you know, where the U.S. didn't want them to really go out there and do what they wanted to do. And sometimes Israel ignores it, and sometimes they heed to it. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it's very complicated. But the thing is that when you live there, you realize that it's a different place to live from anywhere else. You know, you're constantly under threat. You don't know who is a terrorist right there walking down the street.
Yeah. So if they go over there and they start taking out these plants,
mm-hmm.
Is there going to be an attack on Israel?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Like, what does that look like? Is it like?
That's why you got to do it quickly. You know, in Iraq, it's like it was a matter of minutes. I read the book on that attack, you know, and it was very well planned, and you know, it was just, like I said, a few minutes and it was gone.
The attacks will probably be suicide bombers, probably through, you know, an Iranian-funded group from, like, Lebanon. Like,
yeah, you need to infiltrate them. Who knows?
So it's not just going to be, like, they're going to be attacking the borders. That's a given. But you think there's going to be citizens and stuff that are already there, ready to go?
Well, they already are. And the thing is that, yeah, they couldn't get into a conventional war because the U.S. came in. And like we were talking about earlier, I think the other Gulf states will condemn Israel, but they're not going to get involved.
Yeah.
They're not going to, Saudi's not going to fight on behalf of Iran. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense to them.
No, they wouldn't. And, you know, another fear is that maybe Iran won't use it, but it's going to fall into terrorists' hands, you know?
Right.
And you can imagine what that would do. Mm. So, you know, if you get a nuclear bomb into the hands of terrorists. So we got to be really careful about that. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, I don't know how trigger happy they are with that.
But what about, like, you know, us talking about it, and or not even us, we're like, well, this isn't breaking news, right? But, you know, it's all over the media and everything, and it's minute-to-minute information. I mean, right. Do we think about, like, the fact that they're probably, like, 10 steps ahead already? I mean, considering that
Oh, of course, they're a million steps ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got plans in place, and, you know, we're like, oh, 8 days, you got 8 days, and they're like, oh, shit, what are we going to do?
Let's hurry up.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't anything new to them. Yeah.
No, they know what they're going to do. They have 30 scenarios. They have 100 scenarios. I think that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
I just don't know why. I just think it's not going to. And also think about, there's covert things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone in Iran is pro the government. In fact,
mm-hmm.
Iran's army is like five different families. So it's a very factional country.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, you could do something inside. You can, you know, probably do assassinations. You can probably take out some of their infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You might have saboteurs on the inside. Mm-hmm. So now, who are the way to go?
Yeah. But I think they know, and it's very clear that, you see, Israel has got the deterrent of nuclear weapons,
mm-hmm.
and that's what keeps the balance there. Once there's no balance and Iran decides to throw a bomb, all they need is, I mean, they're going to destroy the whole neighborhood. It's not just Israel, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. everyone around them. And besides, Israel's not going to sit back. It's going to obliterate that fucking country. You know, there's not going to be anything left. So there may not be much of Israel left, but there won't be any of Iran left. I can guarantee you that. So, you know. Anyway, we're not going to solve the problems of the world.
Just so screwed up, man.
Just in this morning.
Just, you know, it's just so screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I get it. It's complicated. I don't know anything what I'm talking
about.
That's
but that's what I'm saying, though.
Like,
you know,
let's just bomb the whole fucking land and let's not exist together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just stupid.
Yeah.
And there's people, there's women and children there that are just like, you know what? Fuck you all. I have to wear a damn burqa.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel.
Not only that, but didn't you hear that the Taliban just killed this couple who were committing adultery? And I guess, according to their law, the husband is actually entitled and encouraged to kill his wife if she's if she strays. So they got the wife, they stoned her, and the lover. Yeah. That's Islamic countries for you. What can I tell you? Anyway, we're at the end of the show. Jared, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Jared, and fascinating. Very fascinating. Thank you for sharing.
And good luck with the writing and everything. You know, hopefully we'll have you credited with the Leno jokes one day.
Yes.
If you keep pressing them. If not, you'll just continue getting the $50 checks, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But either way, it works.
Well, look for, might have a show on Crackle, sonyscrackle.com in the next year or so.
Oh, cool.
Oh, really?
A couple of months, yeah.
That's
cool. We're working on that right now.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Do you want people to be able to find you? Do you have a website?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay, good.
Really?
All right. So you guys can just listen to Jared here if you want, and you can't find him anywhere. So
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. Kara, thank you, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.